This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. COVID-19 cases are creeping up again in Malaysia amid warnings from the Ministry of Health about the BA4 and 5 subvariants that are becoming dominant in many other countries. Today, I catch up with Associate Professor Dr. Sharifah Faridah Said Omar, infectious disease physician from the University of Malaya Medical Center, to find out whether we need to be on our guard against another possible wave of COVID-19. Dr. Sharifah, thank you so much for joining me today. Perhaps you could explain what exactly are the BA4 and 5 subvariants and how are they different from, I think, the last variant that everyone was talking about was Omicron.
Okay, so basically, since SARS-CoV-2 virus was identified, scientists have been monitoring and tracking the evolution of virus because, you know, viruses changes over time and these changes is the thing that gives rise to variants. So most changes, they don't have much impact on the virus properties. So what we are looking at is the ability of the virus to spread, whether it causes severe disease, how they perform against the medications that we have, like vaccines, antivirals. Is the testing affected, the PCR test, the RTK antigen test, and also other public health and social measures. So some changes do have an impact, but some do not have any impact. So variants are then characterized either into variants of interest or variants of concerns. So Omicron is the latest variant of concern and has been circulating since November 2021 and is the predominant variant of concern since February 2022. So, you know, the transmission has been ongoing, it's sustained, and this has led to significant evolution within the virus itself, the Omicron virus. And then you get these descendant lineages or subvariants, if you like. And, you know, we've heard about BA1, we've heard about BA2 subvariant, and BA4 and BA5 are the current descendant lineages of Omicron that are increasing. So they're actually sister lineage of BA1 and BA2. They have some, they still have the mutation at the spike protein, but some additional mutation as well. So these BA4 and BA5 and also BA2 to some extent have been labeled as variant of concern lineages under monitoring. So another category, if you like. So the variants are similar to Omicron. It does show an increased transmission signal, but we're not quite sure exactly whether, you know, they have any other differences or not in terms of the fitness of the virus and other advantages on the clinical spectrum of the virus.
So they are the anak-anak of Omicron, so to speak.
Yeah, I think it's a simple way of looking at it because they do have a lot of similarities to Omicron in terms of the mutation on the spike protein, but then they have sort of other additional mutations on the non-spike part of the virus. So yeah.
So, you know, what people would be concerned about is it any more infectious? Does it make the disease any more infectious than it was before?
Yeah, I mean, of course, that is the greatest concern when we have a new variant, whether it's more transmissible, whether it causes more disease and all that. So not all variants cause problems and not all new variants are more transmissible or cause more severe disease than the previous variants. So, you know, we've heard about Epsilon, Kappa, Lambda, Mu and other Greek alphabet named variants, which were identified previously. But, you know, the moment they stopped circulating, they didn't really have a big impact. So only 4 major variants that caused a big impact, and these are labeled under the variants of concern. And Omicron is the latest one under this variants of concern. So, Omicron is well known to have increased transmissibility when compared to the previous variants of concern, which is Delta. And when we look at BA2, it is more transmissible compared to BA1 lineage. So BA4 and BA5 are among the more recently discovered, if you like, lineages. And we don't know for sure whether there is increased transmissibility or not with these 2 lineages. But, the discovery of these lineages does coincide with the increase in number of cases. So, you know, you feel that it probably does cause more transmissibility compared to the previous variants and lineages. But, you know, increase in transmissibility does not always equal to or lead to a more dangerous virus in the clinical sense. meaning that, you know, they don't necessarily cause more severe disease. So overall evidence with Omicron suggests that lower disease severity, despite there are some recent conflicting results. But generally, Omicron is thought to be, you know, yes, it's highly transmissible, but it doesn't really cause more severe disease.
Mm.
So the same applies to BA4, BA5, and also BA1, BA2. So increased transmissibility, but not necessarily more dangerous or more severe disease compared to the previous variants. Mm. But, you know, at the end of the day, when you have an increase in cases, the number of cases go up. And at the same time, you will have an increase in patients being hospitalized, patients who need ICU admission and death. So we always have to, you know, keep our guard up and just observe what's going on in the clinical setting.
Absolutely. There are concerns that BA4 and 5 may cause more reinfection among people who had already been vaccinated or had been infected previously. What do we know about this?
Not much, actually. Mm. So when you talk about reinfection, we talk about people who've been infected previously and now get a new COVID infection. But when we talk about breakthrough infection, this refers to people who have been vaccinated and yet get an infection. So we know for a fact that reinfection is possible. Every time you get a new variant or even in this case, lineage or subvariants, there is a possibility of reinfection. But what they've seen is the risk of reinfection is reduced when someone has had infection in the past. So if you've been infected with COVID, if you do get reinfection, the risk is lower and the risk of you developing severe disease is probably lower as well.
Mm. And what about people who have one or even two boosters? I know the older adults above 60 have been encouraged to go for a second booster jab. So would that further protect them?
Yeah, so that's still a big question mark as well. But I feel that it does. So when we talk about vaccinated people, we talk about the vaccine efficacy in preventing breakthrough infection or symptomatic infection, and also efficacy against severe disease. So, you know, bottom line is vaccinated people are still more protected against infection and severe disease compared to those who are not vaccinated. But these new variants have that ability to escape the immunity provided by the vaccine. And this will therefore result in breakthrough infection or even reinfection itself. So basically, when they looked at, you know, the effects of vaccine efficacy after primary series of vaccination, so the efficacy does go down with the Omicron variant in terms of infection, symptomatic disease, and also severe disease when you compare to the other variants of concern. But saying that, you know, the least reduction, if you like, in protection is for severe disease. So it means that even though you will get infection and you will get symptomatic disease, but the likelihood of you getting severe disease is not as high compared to if you were not vaccinated. So, you know, recent data shows that for severe disease, vaccine efficacy of primary series against Omicron showed very little decline over 6 months. So if you boost someone, if you take your booster, it substantially improves the vaccine efficacy for all the outcomes. So infection, symptomatic disease, and also severe disease. But again, you know, you do see a decline after a couple of months, but not so much in the category of severe disease. So yes, you know, even though it disheartens me to see all these vaccinated people getting infection, but I think we need to keep pushing the agenda and say that, you know, we know this will happen, but more importantly, it will protect you against severe disease.
Will the availability of this oral antiviral Paxlovid further help those who do get infected in sort of reducing the progression to severe disease?
Yeah, so, you know, I was going to say later on that, you know, when we talk about COVID, is going to be, it looks like COVID is going to be here for a long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So on top of trying to stop it from transmitting uncontrollably, we also need to protect those who do get infected, the vulnerable. So that's where the antiviral comes in, and also to some extent the monoclonal antibodies as well. So these people may not have a good immune response to the vaccines. They don't have much protection. So by providing antivirals, and Paxlovid being the one that is has shown the best results so far, would definitely be beneficial. But the caveat is when Paxlovid studies were rolled out, it was done in an era where not many people were vaccinated. So we don't know whether we are going to have that bigger impact, you know, now that we're using it in our population who are vaccinated. But I think at the end of the day, it's just one of your tools to help, you know, control the impact of this disease.
Yes. And so we're keeping an eye on Paxlovid being rolled out, not just in government hospitals, but also in private hospitals and clinics as well. I think, Dr. Sharifah, just to put everything into perspective, how should people be on guard against the potential spread of BA4 and 5 and whether there would potentially be another wave to come?
Yeah, I mean, the moment the number of cases increases, of course, you know, potential of another wave being there is there. And we have seen this in other countries, you know, cases going up and they decline after a while. So being able to monitor this, so surveillance is very, very important. Governments need to continue looking for cases, keeping an eye on cases. But more importantly, to look at the hospital bed occupancy rate and also the outcomes, you know. So yes, we are seeing an increased number of cases, and I think the numbers that we are seeing is actually probably lower than what it actually is, because I think there's a lot of underreporting too. But it is good to see that, you know, you don't have like a surge of beds being used. The bed occupancy is still within control, and you're not seeing a sudden rise in mortality either. So a wave will come as long as we have COVID, as long as they keep mutating and more and variants keep coming back, waves will come. But being able to mitigate, you know, have steps to mitigate the impact of the waves would be the most important thing.
And many of us have started to relax quite a fair bit. What is your advice for us to continue practicing, as the right amount of precautions? You've talked about vaccination already, and I think that message continues, especially if you do meet the criteria for the booster jabs. What about, social activities, especially with people meeting out a lot for Hari Raya Haji, perhaps, you know, what is your advice with regard to testing as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think two years plus down the line, we should be very familiar with this infection already, right? I mean, you get new variants, but in terms of how it is transmitted, hasn't changed. It's still a droplet kind of virus. At some point, it can become airborne. But, you know, that would probably be the main way that it sort of is transmitted from one person to another. So, you know, prevention is always a multi-pronged approach. I mean, just to reiterate, vaccination needs to be there. I personally feel that we probably should be pushing people who need or qualify for the booster to be boosted. I think that's very, very important. Masking, to me, should still continue. But instead of just telling people, you know, mask up and making them do it, emphasis should probably be made on appropriate masking. So, for example, when you're sick, you must wear a mask if you are unable to quarantine at home. You know, there's a lot of flu going around at the moment. So it's not just COVID, right? So yep. It's just common sense. When you're sick, you're unwell, if you can't stay at home, then at least don't spread it to other people, wear a mask. Yep. When you're in a crowded place, when you're in a confined place, wear a mask. If you yourself fall into one of the vulnerable group, I would definitely wear a mask and probably minimize meeting people, especially when, you know, the cases are high. Yep. So it's just common sense. You can't, you know, the government does implement public health and social measures, but at the end of the day, we can't be under lockdown forever, right? Mm-hmm. I think lockdown should only be there if it starts to, you know, put pressure on the healthcare system to the point that we can't cope anymore. But otherwise, there'll have to be, you know, people taking steps to protect themselves as well.
Yeah. And wear that mask properly. It's doing no good if it's below your nose or under your chin.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And any word on testing, Dr. Sharifa?
So testing, okay, I'm not a great advocate for testing before attending an event, or, you know, the weekly testing that some institutional establishments make their employees do. I don't 100% agree with that, because I feel that sometimes it diverts their attention away from good public health measures, good social measures.
Because there's the assumption that if I test negative, I can walk around without my mask and things like that.
Exactly. So, you know, you completely forgot that you've been having fever for 2 days. You've had you have a runny nose, and then just because your result is negative, you don't wear your mask. You go back to work. You go and interact with others. So, especially with the saliva test, you know, it's a self test. It's very dependent on how you do the test. So the test is definitely not 100% accurate. I think it sometimes will give a false sense of security, not just to the person who does it, but also to the organizers who's doing these, you know, public events or gatherings, right? Your attendees shows you a negative test, but you forget to ask them, have you been well? Are you unwell? Have you had any contacts recently? You know, that kind of thing. So I think regular mandatory testing should only be done if you're not going to ignore the other important measures for preventing infection. It is a good tool to quickly diagnose, but to use it to say, I don't have COVID, I'm free from COVID, can be dangerous in certain instances.
Yeah. So it's back to vaccination, getting boosted, properly masking, and, you know, limiting or staying away from crowded social gatherings if you are in the vulnerable group. Thank you so much, Dr. Sharifa. I've been speaking to Associate Professor Dr. Sharifa Farida Syed Omar, infectious disease physician from University Malaya Medical Center. This has been Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.